Morning, today's daf and Shabbos Yud Zayin. We are in Taz Zayin Amud Beis. We're starting on the bottom of the Amud, and we're finishing up today the sugya of Yud Ches Dover. 18 zeros that were enacted by Beis Shammai on a day in which they paid a visit to a chola, and they turned out that there were a number of students there up in the Aliyah, and so they took a vote, and on 18 matters, the matter was decided in favor of Beis Shammai over that of Beis Hillel. And the Mishnah only made reference to it. The Mishnah goes all the way back to Yom Amud Beis. And so the Gemara now has spent its time going through all 18. The Gemara never makes a systematic list of the 18. The Gemara just simply says that there are 18. The Gemara goes through 18. There is a little bit of shuffling to do, as some Tanayim dispute what exactly are the Yud Ches Dover. And so by the end of the sugya, there is going to be a little bit of shuffling going on. But in the meantime, however, for the most part, there is agreement in terms of what they are. How do we get onto this topic of discussion, Masechet Shabbos? Most of the Yud Ches Dover have nothing to do with Shabbos, but it has to do with the fact that the Mishnah is here in Masechet Shabbos, and it's going off of two gzeiros that were mentioned in the Mishnayos. Delousing a garment on Shabbos and reading by a lamp is two of the 18 gzeiros. And so the Mishnah says, ve'elu min ha'alachos, going back to the Mishnah on Yud Gimel, these are from the Lachos she'amru ba'aliyas Chananya ben Chizkiya ben Garon, she'alu levakro. And Nimnu, and they had a vote over there, Rabbi Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, ve'yud chesvarim gazru bo bayom. And on that day, bo bayom, so there was a count and a vote and a selection to go with Shitas Beis Shammai over that of Beis Hillel. And so yesterday we went through a couple more. And so today we conclude with the conclusion of today's daf on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. So when we get to the Mishnah, so we will formally conclude this topic. Admittedly, a lot of Tumat Tahara within the course of this discussion. The Gemara continues with more on Tumat and Tahara. Ve'idach Mahi did not. So we're going to learn together a Mishnah in Olos. The Mishnah in Olos called Metaltum Mevim Esatuma Beove Hamardeya. That when it comes to anything which is carried, so it's going to transmit tuma at the thickness of a mardeya. A mardeya is a goad, G-O-A-D, that which is used in order to encourage an animal to move forward. Okay, so in order to facilitate understanding of this Mishnah in Olos, just a little bit of background. We're talking about Tumas Mace, and we're speaking specifically about Tumas Ohel. We know that when it comes to Mace is the Avi Avos Tuma, when you have remains of a human. So it is mitame in one of three ways. Maga, masa, u, ve, ohel. Maga is physical contact. Masa is by just simply carrying the remains, or ohel, or being underneath the same roof. The truth of the matter is that ohel manifests actually in a number of ways. One is by sharing the same roof. So as long as you and the mace are under the same roof, so what happens with the tumah is that the tumah goes up to the roof, hits the roof, spreads out over whatever the area of the roof is, drops down, and it's going to be metame adam v'kelim that is underneath the same roof. And the tumah, the degree of tumah that the person is when he is experiencing tumah in this manner, is that the person is going to be an av ha-tumah. The person is going to be tameh meis, which means that in order for tumah, for him to become tahor, he needs to go through the process of the paraduma, sprinkling the mechatas on him on day 3 and on day 7. In order of the definition of a roof, the roof has to be at least a square area of one tefach by one tefach. There are other ways of transmitting tumah by ohel, and that is by being either directly above or directly below the mace. Normally, of course, a person is going to be directly above, but in either way, the way the tumah works is that the tumah of the mace just directly ascends, and if you are hovering directly over, you are what's called in halacha being ma'ahil on the mace, and you're going to be tameh. So you're not sharing the same roof as it. You're just simply in its vertical path. And as long as you're in the vertical path, you are going to become tameh. Same degree of tumah as we described previously. You are now going to be an avatuma. And the tahara process is going to be paraduma on day 3 and on day 7. It's a 7-day tahara process. Good. That is all just basic background in order to facilitate understanding. The Mishnah over here is providing for us what is a tremendous chiddush. And that is that the goad, the mardeya, is going to function as an ohel. Now, the mardeh over here was a standard measurement, and that is that it had a circumference of a tefach. Now, a circumference of a tefach obviously means that its diameter is going to be far less than that of a tefach. Just for estimation purposes, let's call it a third of a tefach. The diameter is going to be a third of a tefach. Now, to facilitate ohel to be underneath the same roof, so you need a tefach by tefach. Or, if it's circular, it has to be a diameter of a tefach. Now, understandably, a diameter of a tefach does not mean that its square area is going to be a tefach by a tefach, but nevertheless, as far as the shape of a circle is concerned, if it has a diameter of a tefach, that's considered an ohel. Meanwhile, over here, what the Mishnah is teaching us, what the Tanakhama is teaching us, is that despite the fact that the goad itself only has a circumference of a third of a tefach, nevertheless, it's going to function as an ohel. That obviously is a tremendous chiddush. In fact, it is such a tremendous chiddush that immediately what you hear is the reaction. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, continuing now in this mission, Oalos. As we now turn to the top of Yitzayin, Aleph, Akapeches Bini, Shizu Alacha Mikupeches. So he places a curse upon himself, and admittedly, the language that he uses is very strong, little hard to hear, but literally the words mean is that I should shorten the life of my children. This halacha is in fact a very short-sighted halacha. He's putting a curse upon himself. He's mekalos atzmos, says Rashi. Now, admittedly, the language he uses is very strong, but he feels very strongly that this, in fact, is this halacha is stated incorrectly, and he just simply disagrees. Sheshama shomevetam. When somebody hears this, he's going to be making the following mistake. Ha'ikar over umar da'ok tefo. So what's going to happen is that the farmer passes by with a goat on his shoulder. V'ihel tzido achas ala kever. Tima oso mishum kelem amalim ala meis. And what the person's going to think now is that with the goat on his shoulder, and the only thing that is now going over the mace is going to be the actual goat itself. So he thinks now that he experienced Tumas Oel. And he now thinks that he is to the same degree of Tuma as the mace itself. And he vehemently disputes this point. Now, to clarify the Rabbi Tarfon's viewpoint, now obviously, the goat itself is a keli, it's a utensil, and therefore it is Mekabel Tuma. For the purpose of this discussion, let us assume that the goat itself is not made out of metal. Let us assume it's made out of wood. If it, in fact, was made out of metal, so then there was another consideration, and that is metal has an interesting property as it relates to Tumas mace, and that is metal remains the same degree of Tumah as the mace itself. The mace falls under the category of an Avi Avos Tumah. Anything coming into contact with it drops down a level to becoming an Avatama, but metal coming into contact with a mace remains on the same level. The metal that we're touching the mace or experiencing ohel from the mace is going to be an avi avos atoma. Let us assume right now that this goad is just made out of wood, and so therefore it does not have this quality. And according to Rabbi Tarfon, what now happens? When the goad goes directly over the mace, so the goad now, being that it doesn't have the requisite shear of an ohel itself, it is not a roof itself, because it doesn't have a diameter of a tefach, it only has a circumference of a tefach. So what happens to the goad now is the goad is an avatumah. That part's true. But it doesn't serve as an ohel. So now this goad, which is being touched by the person, being handled by the person now is a rishon l'tumah. And so this person now being a rishon l'tumah, so it's true that he needs a tahara, but he does not need the procedure of the paraduma. The paraduma procedure is only for those who are in the level of an avatumah. But this person, however, does not need the entire process of 7 days of Tahara with the Afer Paraduma. Rather, all he needs is just simply Tefillah B'mikvah and Harev Shemesh. And so, what Rabbi Tarfon is saying is that this goad does not serve as an ohel. It certainly is going to become Tameh because the goad itself is Ma'ahil on the mace, but it doesn't function, it does not serve as an ohel in of itself. So it becomes tummy, but it's not a conductor from an oil standpoint of that tumma. And so Rabbi Tarfon is seriously objecting. And the reason why we're learning this Mishnah over here is because of the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that we're about to begin. I'm Rabbi Akiva, ani atakein. Shiyu divrei chachamim kayamim. So Rabbi Akiva says, look, I'm going to go back to the position of the chachamim. I'm going to explain the chachamim. And so therefore, the chachamim's position is in fact going to be sustained. And the way he explains it is as follows. Shiyu kolam etatlam evim asatoma. Ala adam shinose osam. Be'over madea ve'alatzman b'chol shehin. Ve'al sharadam v'kelem be'poseach tefach. That as far as the person who is carrying the goad, so he's going to become tamei. And in fact, he is in fact going to become tamei with tuma shiva. But that's only for the person carrying the goad. As far as anything else is concerned, meaning anything else that comes into contact with the goad, but wasn't carrying it at the time, so they're going to be standard tuma of becoming a rishon, meaning the goad is an av, and anything else that comes in contact with the goad, whether it be Adam or Kalim, and this is after the goad went over the mace, so then we work with the standard rules that the goad is an Av, and the person or the Kali that touches it subsequently is going to become a Rishon. And so what Rabbi Akiva is saying is that the Chachamim's position is a limited position, and it's only speaking about the actual farmer itself who is carrying the goad. Now, why should that be? The person carrying the goat is going to become an avatama to the point in which he's going to require the 7-day procedure of tahara. Rabbi Tarfon seems to be making an excellent point, which is that the goat itself is not in ohel, and so therefore the goat is an avatama. The person carrying it should only be a rishon latama. So what's behind the sheet of Rabbi Kiva? So as Rashi explains over here, this is in fact the gzeirah. This is the one of the 18 gzeiras of Beit Shammai, in which the person carrying it is going to be viewed as an avatama on a rabbinic level. And why should that be? So if you take a look at Rashi, I need to take shihu divrei chachamim, and I'm reading the Rashi inside. Rashi writes, she'omrei mavi harmadea mevi tuma kayamin yesh davar shemevin alav tuma mamash liton hazayim medivreihem. So there is a requirement of the sprinkling of the paraduma, but that's medivrehem. That is medivre chachamim. Kigon ala adam hanosim shetima botuma maga min haTorah. So for the person carrying, where he now is metame bimaga, gazru alav beove hamardea litame tumas ohel. So there's a gzera that we're going to treat the goad as if it is a roof, and so therefore for the person carrying it, he is going to become tame tumas shiva. Why? Continuing in Rashi, Gzera Hekefo Mishum Avyav. And the reason why is because despite the fact that the goat itself in diameter is only a third of a tefach, its circumference is a tefach. And so therefore, for the layman who now in his mind knows about this number tefach, and he knows that the circumference of this goat is a tefach, so he's going to be a little bit confused. And Rashi explains the confusion. The Kevan because let's go with the Din Torah. And the Din Torah would have been that we tell the person, oh, the goad itself is an avatuma. You were currently carrying the goad, and therefore you were touching the goad, and therefore you require tefillah b'mikvah and herev shemesh. Now, as far as this person is concerned, in his mind, what is he erroneously going to think? Rashi writes, now he didn't come into contact with the mace itself. So he's going to think to himself, oh, the reason why I'm tamei is because of ohel. Because he's thinking about the goad, and rather than thinking about the diameter, he's thinking about the circumference. Again, it was a standard tool with a standard measurement. And he's going to think he's going to be correct about this. The circumference is a tefach. Umishim sheyesh bekefo tefach. And now he's thinking to himself, that's so curious. Oh, I became tame, and I don't need to go through the procedure of the Meipara, and I did experience Tumas Ohel. That part is erroneous, but that's what he thinks. So what is he going to come? What is he going to walk away thinking? So he'll think to himself, oh, any time that I've experienced ohel, I don't have to go through the process of of a full tahara of 7 days. I just need to go through the process of tefillah and harav shemesh, and he's going to think about the experience that he had with the goad, where he went to his local chacham, and his local chacham told him, you don't have to go through the process of 7 days. You only need to go through 1 day. And because he's thinking about the circumference, he erroneously now concludes, oh, any time that I experience Tumas Meis through Ohel, I only need to go through Tevilah and Harav Shemesh. So that's why the Chachamim put a gzera on this farmer and told the farmer that even though Me'ikar Hadin, he's only Tameh for 1 day, Tevilah and Harav Shemesh, but because of the erroneous conclusion that he's going to walk away with, so they told him that he has to go through the process of a 7 day tahara. Aval shara adam bekelim she'eino gimbo ve'ein alecha l'taman klal. But as far as any other person who was not currently holding the goad or for any other kli, emi v'im shem tama ela b'poseach tefach. So they're not going to walk away with this erroneous conclusion, and so therefore the gzera didn't need to extend to any other person or to any other keli. And as Rashi points out over here, but I know I already said this, and this is Rabbi Akiva explaining the Tanakama of the Mishnah. Ad Kan. That is now the Gzera de Rabbanan that was imposed by the Chachamim. Now, Rabbi Tarfon obviously doesn't hold of this Gzera, and in a moment the Gemara is going to ask that question, but that is Gzera as understood by Rabbi Akiva. And now going back to the Gemara just clarifies points that we already established. Okay, and the Gemara points out exactly what we learned together in Rashi, but obviously the Gemara came first. And the goad standard measurement was a circumference of a tefach, the diameter being a third of a tefach, and the reason why the Chachamim made a gzera for the person who was holding the goad is because in his mind he may confuse the diameter to the circumference. He may think that he experienced Tumas Ohel, as we saw together in Rashi, and so that's why the Chachamim gave him the gzera that he has to go through the 7 day tahara process. Fine. Ula Rabbi Tarfon da Amar Akapeches Benishach Shalach Azumikupeches. Now, according to Rabbi Tarfon, who simply dismisses this point altogether, and Rabbi Tarfon says that this halacha is not stated correctly by the Tanakama, and in no way is defending the Tanakama. So, according to Rabbi Tarfon now, he simply dismisses this as being a gzera. And that means that according to Rabbi Tarfon now, we are minus one. There are not 18. And as the Gemara has assumed throughout this entire sugya, everyone agrees to the number 18. It's just simply a question of how to get there. So, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Af Benos Kusim, Nidos Me'arisasam, Bobayam Gazru. And so the Gemara says that as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, so one is that he's going to be subscribing to the idea of Benos Kusim, an idea that we already articulated yesterday, that the daughters of Kusim, even on the day that they're born, the Chachamim labeled and gave them the status of a Nida, even from birth. The Gemara Nida described this Gzera in more detail, but this is a Gzera that was given over to the Kusim. Uve'idach Sarah Leker Reb Meir. Now, as far as one of the debates that we saw, in terms of placing the kli underneath the pipe in order to collect the rainwater, and whether or not that was Maim Shuvim or that was not Maim Shuvim, so he subscribed to the viewpoint of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir counted that as one of the Yud Ches Davar, and so therefore, when you add these two on behalf of Rabbi Tarfon, so you get up to the number 18. Uve Idach. Continuing in the Gemara now, as the Gemara goes over the remainder of the 18 gzeros, habot zelagas, somebody who's harvesting, and so he's collecting the grapes, and we're back to the topic of hechsher kalim. I'm sorry, hechsher ochlin, and the topic of hechsher ochlin is that in order for food to become susceptible to tumah, so it has to be primed. The priming of a food means that it has to come into contact with one of the seven liquids. One of the seven liquids is grape juice or wine. And so we're talking about the early stages of the collection of the grape, the very beginning of the harvest, where basically all I'm doing is I'm collecting the grapes. Now at this point in time, I just plucked them right off the vine, and so there is no juice. And meanwhile, Shammai Omer Huchshar. Shammai is of the opinion that the grapes, even at this early stage of harvest, are going to be mukhshar lekabel. Some of them are considered primed already. Hillel Omer lo hukshar. And Hillel is of the opinion that no, that the grapes are not hukshar. Excuse me. As we are about to engage in the discussion of hechsher, so right now, the first thing to observe is this is not Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, but rather this is Hillel and Shammai themselves who are arguing this very point. What exactly are they arguing about? So, as you are collecting the grapes, so you're stacking them in a basket. And there is going to be, as the more grapes amass in this basket, there's going to be a little bit of pressure placed on the grapes that are towards the bottom. And so what happens is that there is going to be some juice that's going to ooze out. And that juice is going to be considered grape juice. And so what exactly is behind the position of Hillel? So Hillel subscribes to the idea that this juice that oozes out is not something that you want. The baskets that you collect in are generally wicker baskets. They have holes on the bottom. And any juice that comes out is just simply going to drop through the holes of the wicker and are going to drop to the ground. And as we said, as rule number one when it comes to hechsher, that there only is hechsher when you want the liquid. And in a scenario where you don't want the liquid, it's eino l'ratzon, so then this liquid is not going to serve as a machsher. And so Hillel therefore argues that since the grapes are being collected in a basket, in a wicker basket, where the holes on the bottom, and any juice that comes out is just simply going to go through, so this is eino l'ratzon, and therefore it's not going to be a machsher. What is the position of Shammai? So in a moment we're going to see. So Amar Leih Hillel l'Shammai, and this discussion became an extraordinarily heated discussion. Hillel says to Shammai, min mei ma botzim b'tahara ve'in moskim b'tahara. And so Hillel says to Shammai, look, we don't agree with you, and we also find inconsistency within your position. Because within your position, we know that you're of the opinion that in the harvesting of olives, you don't subscribe to this rule. When a person harvests olives, so, again, you go to the tree, collect the olives, you put them in the basket, and we know that you agree with us that any of the oil or any of the juice that is expressed out of the olives based on the pressure that's placed on the olives is not going to be served as a machshir. And so we know you hold that position regarding olives, and so why don't you remain consistent with that position and translate that over to the case of the grapes as well. Amar Lei, so Shammai says to Hillel, im taknitaini, so Shammai says to Hillel, if you continue to provoke me, goes running to my af al hamasika. So then what we'll do is we'll just extend our gzera even to that of the alvas as well. And so the way the dialogue goes over here, it certainly sounds like what Shammai is saying is basically, if you keep at me, I'm just going to extend the gzera as if almost like a challenge to Hillel. But perhaps the better way to understand the Gemara over here is that by virtue of the fact that you don't understand what I'm saying regarding grapes, so therefore, if you don't understand, I can't imagine the masses are going to understand. And so that means to say that we're going to have to extend the gzera to olives as well, because the masses are not going to understand. And so therefore, in order to keep our original gzera, we're going to have to extend the gzera as well. But anyway, this argument became an extraordinarily heated topic. A sword went down in the Beis HaMedrash. And the idea of a sword being in the Beis HaMedrash obviously is extraordinarily unusual. Hard for me to explain exactly what the sword is doing over there. Certainly speaks to the idea of the tension that mounted over this debate. Amar Anichnas Ikanes. And a declaration was said, anyone who wants to enter can enter. Hayotze al yetze, but anyone who's in the Beis HaMedrash right now is locked in the Beis HaMedrash. And the tension was so great on that day that Hillel himself basically became subject to that of Shammai, and basically Hillel turned into a student of Shammai. And this is a day that was such a fraught day that it was like the day in which the eagle was erected. And now during the tkufa of the eagle, so you had Jew against Jew, and there was in fact the tension over there did result in death. And so over here, I can't imagine that we're going to go to the degree where people were killing one another, but verbally, people were killing one another. And this turned into an extraordinarily tense moment. Now, even though Hillel himself capitulated to the position of Shammai, but nevertheless, nobody accepted it. The people did not accept the gzeirah of Shammai. And along came the students of Shammai, and now we're going one generation later, and now we're entering into our discussion of Yurches Davar, and so now when it came to the vote, so Beit Shammai were greater than in numbers than that of Beit Hillel, so they reenacted the gzeirah that their Rebbe Shammai tried to enact, and so therefore the gzeirah was that when one harvests the grapes, so the liquid that comes out of it is in fact going to be a machshir, and the grapes in the basket are going to be considered mukshir lekabel tumah. They're considered at this point in time primed. And so now, a simple question, and the Gemara is going to give no less than four answers to this question. So as we already explained, the position of Hillel, and subsequently the students of Hillel, as we already explained, which is that the liquid that comes out of the grapes while you're harvesting is collected in the basket. The baskets have holes on the bottom. And as a result of that, any of the liquid is going to simply fall through the holes in the bottom. And so therefore, that juice, that grape juice, is enol l'ratzon. And therefore, it's not going to be a machshir. And so therefore, what is the position of Shammai? So the Gemara is going to ask that question. The Gemara is going to give four answers. My taima. What is the reason why Shammai made such a gzera, and subsequently Beit Shammai made a gzera that was accepted? So Amr Ziri, Amr Rabbi Chanin, Gzera Shammai Yivatzerna Bekupos Tameos. So the Gemara gives one answer. And that is that for concern that the basket that's going to be used is a basket which is already Tameh. And there is an idea, and this is a controversial idea. There is an idea that when liquid comes into any keli that's Tameh, because of the Tameh status of the Kli, so therefore it gives Chashivus to the liquid that's in that Tameh Keli. Now, why that should be, hard really to express why that should be. Rashi over here does not provide a svara. In fact, Rashi also admits over here that he doesn't know where the source of this debate is, but it is a controversial position. And so so Shammai is predicated on the fact that when the grapes are collected in the basket, they're collected in a basket that is Tameh, and some are of the opinion that a Tameh basket is going to give chashivas to the liquid. And so therefore the liquid serves as a machshir. The Gemara says that answer is acceptable, but only if I subscribe to this controversial viewpoint. So if you subscribe to this viewpoint, shapir, that's very good. But as we pointed out, this is a position of controversy. And if I don't subscribe to this position, so then we are absent an explanation on behalf of Beit Shammai. The Gemara gives a second explanation. So a second explanation of the Gemara is that the gzera of Shammai is that when you collect the grapes, most of the time they are collected in a wicker basket. But sometimes they're collected in a waterproof basket. And obviously that waterproof basket, it was tarred with some sort of pitch on the bottom. And so therefore, any liquid that comes out of the grape is now going to remain in the basket, and therefore it's going to prime the grapes, and the grapes now will be mukshal akabotomo. Now, interesting, why don't they say that regarding olives? Meaning, let's go back to the point that Hillel made to Shammai, where Hillel says to Shammai, we know you don't agree as it relates to the olives. Why wouldn't they translate this halacha over to the olives? So you have to say that as it relates to the olives, the juice that squeezes out of the olives post-harvest, immediately post-harvest, so that does not have the status of olive oil. It's true that olive oil is one of the seven liquids that's going to prime a food. That part's true. However, the juice that comes out immediately upon harvest, so that's not viewed as olive oil. The Gemara has a term to describe. It's called mohel. It's just simply an expressed liquid that comes out of the olive. And so therefore, that is not going to be a machshir. The third explanation of the Gemara, Rava Amar Gzera Mishum Hanoshchos. Rava says that the reason why Beit Shammai made the Gzera, originally Shammai, and then subsequently Beit Shammai made the Gzera, is because of Noshchos. Now, literally, the word means to bite. And the way Rashi understands it over here, it's the last Rashi on the Amud. I'll just paraphrase. Rashi explains that when you're collecting the grapes, there are going to be clusters of grapes, and there are going to be grapes that are stuck together. And they're going to be need to be taken apart. And when you take the when you take apart one grape from the other that's clung together, so ultimately what's going to happen is that there will be some juice coming out of it. And you did that biyadayim, you did that with your own hands. And so therefore, it serves as a machshir. It's almost like it's a psik resha, meaning since you know that the liquid is going to come out when you try to separate the grapes, so therefore, that liquid is by definition going to be viewed as l'ratzon, and therefore it's going to be a machshir. That's the third explanation behind Beis Shammai. And the Gemara here over here provides the fourth. Rav Nachman Amar Rava Baravua Pamim Shadam Holech LeKarmo Leida Im Igia Navim LeBatzra Olo. What's going to happen is that sometimes a person is going to go out to the vineyard to see whether or not the grapes are ready to be harvested. V'notal Eshkol Anavim LeSochto. And what he's going to do is he'll take a cluster of grapes in order to squeeze it out. Umizalef Algabe Anavim. And while squeezing the grapes, he's going to be splattering the juice of the grapes over the other grapes. Uvishas Bitsira Adai Mashke Tofech Aleihem. Now, at this point in time, when the liquid is on the grapes while they're connected, that's not a machshir. Meaning any fruit that is still grounded, that's still connected to the ground, even though liquid falls on it, it's not yet going to be a machshir. Now, intuitively, we all know this to be the case, meaning when as the fruit is out in the field, so it's raining, and why don't we just simply say that the rain itself creates hechshir. But the halacha is that machshir, a fruit is only primed only after it's detached from the ground. But the concern over here would be, is that since the person now, while testing the grapes, splatters the juice on the grapes, and then, subsequently, when he later harvests the grapes, there's still going to be some residue juice on the grape, and now it's detached, and so now it'll serve as a hechsher. And that's going to be a fourth explanation behind the Shita of Shammai. So quickly to summarize, so a major machlokes between Hillel and Shammai regarding when you are harvesting your grapes and you're putting them in the basket. And even if it's a wicker basket, so Shammai's of the position, and subsequently Beis Shammai ruled in this manner that the grapes are going to be mukshel lekabel tumah, despite the fact that the juice of the grape goes through the basket, through the wicker, and it's anal l'ratzon, but still Beis Shammai made gzera. What is the reason behind it? So we just went through the Gemara, where the Gemara gave us four possibilities in terms of what is the basis of the gzera of Shammai. The idach, we're almost done, as now we are on the top of Yudzayin Amud Beis. So what is going to be another one of the Yudches Davar? Amar Tevi Rishba. Tevi Rishba. Tevi's his name. Rishba says Rashi. He was a trapper. Rashi Pores Nishbin Nets, says Rashi. Latsud Chayav Ha'of, in order to trap animals and birds. And Amar Shmuel, so he says B'Shem Shmuel, Af gidule truma, bo bayam gazro. The idea that when I have the growth of truma, and the status of the growth of truma is that it's going to be truma, so that was enacted on that day. That's part of Yudches Davar. Interesting Rashi over here, second line in Rashi, gidule truma. Rashi writes, im zara. If let's say I took truma, and let's say the Kohen himself took truma, and it doesn't have to be the Kohen, but let's say the Kohen took truma, and he replanted that in the ground. And Vafil Davish Zara Kala. And Rashi says, and we can even be talking about where it's a seed. Rashi gives examples like Tvul and Kitnis. Let's say it's a seed, like a kernel, and you plant it in the ground. And what happens to that seed is that seed goes through full decomposition in order to produce a new growth. And so the halacha views that as a Davar Chadash. Panim Chadashim Balukan. It's a totally new entity. And whatever grows from that, may ikar hadin, according to a strict letter of the law, does not have the status of truma. But the chachamim gave it a gzera, that gedule truma, that when I take the seed of truma and I plant in the ground, so it is going to have the status of truma. Why the chachamim made a gzera like that, we'll see in just a moment. Amar Rabbi Chanina, back to the Gemara, second line down. Sorry, my taima. The Gemara wants to know, what is the basis of this gzera? Why did the chachamim make such a gzera? Amar Rabbi Chanina gzera mishum truma tahora b'yad Yisrael. And the reason is because of truma tahora in the hands of a Yisrael. Meaning that if you are a Yisrael and you want to do tax evasion and you don't want to give the truma over to a kohen. So what you'll do with the truma, what Yisrael will do with the truma, is he'll just simply take whatever truma he collected. It's going to be 2% of the total, and he'll just simply replant it in the ground. And by replanting in the ground, if we went according to the strict letter of the law, so all that new growth now is not going to have the status of truma, but it'll have the status of chulin. Somewhat imprecise in that of that new growth, 2% of it is going to have to be given to the kohen as truma, but still he gets to save 98% of it and retain it for himself. And so for fear of a farmer, a Yisrael farmer who engages in such activity in order to evade his truma obligation, so the Chachamim made such a gzera. Amar Rava, so Rava says, I don't accept this as an explanation. Rava says, look, if somebody's really interested in avoiding having to give the truma over to the Kohen, so the truth of the matter is that of that 2%, the vast majority of that 2% doesn't even need to be designated as truma to begin with. Skip the parentheses. Because let's remind ourselves of the opinion of Shmuel. The opinion of Shmuel that said throughout Shas, you can see on the side of the Gemara, Kedushin, Avodah Zarah, Chulin, the opinion of Shmuel is, Chita Achas Poteres HaSakri, that, Me'ikar Hadin, how much truma that has to be taken off from a pile of grain in order to relieve its obligation of truma, you only need to take off one kernel. You do not need to give off 2%. 2% is an amount that was mandated by the Chachamim. But Me'ikar Hadin, all you need to take off is one kernel, and that creates tikkun. That is going to rectify the rest of it. Now, of course, there still is Meiser that needs to be given off. And of the Meiser, yes, it's true, Truma's Meiser of the Meiser is given off over to the Kohen as well. But as far as the Truma's concerned, you only need to take off one kernel. So if the farmer, if our Yisrael, was really interested in avoiding Truma, all he would need to do is just simply take off one kernel, and then the rest of it he could retain for himself. And by virtue of the fact that the farmer didn't do that, so it means that we believe him. It's almost like a migu. Elegzera mishum truma tamei biyad kohen dilmamashile gabe vaasil lidei tekala. So Rava gives his own explanation, a preferred explanation, and that is the following. We're now talking about the truma after it was already given over to the kohen. And now let's envision the following scenario. The kohen was given the truma, and let's say the truma becomes tamei, or better grammatically stated, the truma becomes tamei. Now, in the event that the truma becomes tamei, what can the kohen do with it? So if it's not olive oil, there is nothing the kohen can do with it. Meaning, obviously, he cannot consume it. It can't be used for fuel and illumination. So it's going to basically go to waste. So what the kohen could do as a really wonderful idea is that he could take the truma tamei, he could plant it in the ground, and the growth now is going to be edible to him. Because again, me'ikar adin, once you plant the seed and now it sprouts anew, so that's now a davar chadash. It's a totally new entity. And so that's what the kohen could do. Now, as wonderful as an idea as it is, the chachamim frowned heavily on this idea. Why? So the Gemara says it very, very succinctly. The Gemara says, asu lidei tekala. Because what can end up happening over here is that he's going to have to wait for the harvest. He's going to have to wait for the planting season. And so that means that the Truma Tamei is going to stay by the Kohen for some time. While the Truma Tamei stays by him, so at one point or another, he may end up forgetting that it is in fact Truma Tamei. He'll just have it in his mind that it's just simply Truma, and he may end up coming to eat it. And what the Chachamim wanted is that if the Truma was in an edible state, then he wants the Kohen to eat it immediately. But if the Truma is not in an edible state, i.e. it's Truma Tamei, and there is a solution, but the solution is going to require delay, the Chachamim did not want that, and so the Chachamim therefore made a gzera, that when you plant the Truma Tamei, the result is going to be that it is Truma. Interesting Rashi over here, Rashi writes that as far as what it's going to be when it grows, is that it's actually going to remain Truma Tamei. That's Rashi's understanding. Tosfos over here, you could see the second Tosfos. He doesn't agree with Rashi. He says it's just simply Truma when it regrows. Either and Tosfos still argues that the Gzera is going to be effective. See Tosfos for that short discussion. But anyway, that was the reason behind the Gzera of the growth of Truma, Gidulei Truma being Truma. V'idach, continuing in the Gemara. Am Rabbi Chiya bar Ami Mishmei De'ula Af Mishihich Shechlo B'derech. Let's say a person is walking. It's late Friday afternoon. And all of a sudden he realizes that it's Shabbos and his wallet's still in his pocket. Now we're not dealing with the Muksa issue over here. We're dealing with the simple question of how do you get the wallet home? How can you get the wallet home? So one way that he can avail himself to getting the wallet home is, we're assuming that he's walking through a Rishus Arabim, is by simply stopping before he gets to Dala Amos. He'll walk just short of Dala Amos, stop. He'll walk just short of Dala Amos, he'll stop. And that way, he'll avoid the Isser of being Mavir Dala Amos Rishus Arabim. However, as one can imagine, this is going to be very time-consuming, very laborious, and the chances are is that he's going to end up walking more than Dala Amos. And so what the Chachamim said as a gzera is that if a person finds himself in such a situation, so he should not avail himself to walking less than Dala Amos, but rather he should give it over to a non-Jew. And even though there runs the risk with that, nevertheless, the Chachamim made a gzera that this is the preferred method. And let me just read that in the Gemara. Av mishyich shelo b'derech nos in kiso l'nachri, bo b'yom gazru. That gzera was also done bo b'yom. V'idach, almost done. Amar bali amar avime san v'sa, pitan, shmeinan, yenan, ubenoseim, kulam yirches davar, hein. The gzera that was imposed on the bread and the oil and the wine and the daughters of non-Jews, so that was all part of Yudches Davar. Now, even though we just identified four different items, but categorically they all fall under the same category. And the reason why the Chachamim made Gzera is because of, well, the Gemara in a moment is just about to unveil. So the Gemara says, okay, that works out well according to Rav Meir. Meaning now we have articulated 18 different Gzeras that were taught. The Gemara points out, however, that according to Rav Yossi, it's not 18, but rather it's 17. Rav Yossi in yesterday's daf disagreed with the case of the pail that was left underneath the gutter, and in terms of whether or not that's Maim Shuvim or that's not Maim Shuvim, in a scenario where it was left there inadvertently, and so he says that that is not considered Maim Shuvim. He did not view that as one of the Yudches Davar. So the Gemara says, so according to Rabbi Yossi, we only have 17. Ika had Rav Acha bar Ada, the Amar Rav Acha bar Ada, Amar Rav Yisrael Gazru al pitam mishum shmeinam, v'ashmeinam mishum yenam, v'al pitam mishum shmeinam. Sorry. So the Gemara says that he subscribes to the following memra of Rav Yitzchak. So the Gzera was bread because of oil, oil because of wine. The Gemara, before finishing its point, wants to know, apitam mishum shmeinam, what do you mean bread because of oil? Ma'ul mei deshemim mipat. Why should oil be any different than bread? Meaning, what is the sequence over here? Elagazru al pitam shmeinam mishum yenam. Meaning, the gzera that one is not allowed to eat bread or oil that's produced by a non-Jew is because the Chachamim did not want us to be drinking the wine together with a non-Jew. The al yenam mishum benosehem, and did not want us to drink the wine of a non-Jew, because it would lead to intermarriage. Now, the truth of the matter is, I say intermarriage, that may be an imprecise translation over here. It could just simply be yichud with a non-Jewish woman. But either way, abenoseh mishum davar acher. And the issue is that if one were to be spending this much time, social time together with a non-Jew, by first starting off by eating their bread and their oil, and then ultimately drinking their wine, which then leads to either intermarriage or just simply yichud. So what's going to happen is davar acher. The Gemara over here is making reference to idolatry. And so the gzera of the Chachamim, all these gzeras fall under the category of Ovid Avodah Zarah, that it'll lead to idolatry. Now the truth of the matter is we haven't broken any new ground over here. This is what we just said moments earlier. The reason why the Gemara quotes the memra of Rav Yitzchak is for the next point. Now the next point that the Gemara couches in very veiled terms. Al davar acher mishum davar acher. And there was another gzera as well. And it was for something over something. Now, as I just pointed out, the Gemara here speaks in extraordinarily veiled terms. What does that mean? My davar acher? The Gemara wants to know, what is this gzera that we just described? So, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Gazra al tinuk nachri shemetame b'ziva. That when it comes to a non-Jewish male, So he is going to have a gzeiras tuma derabanan, and the chachamim gave him the status of being a zav. So that means that anything that the non-Jewish male is going to make contact with is going to be tameh, because midrabanan he has the status of a zav. Shelo yeitinuk Yisrael regel etzlo b'mishkav zachor. And the reason why is that they wanted to create distance between the Jew and the Nachri, because back then Mishkav Zachor was a prevalent issue. And so therefore, in order to avoid the Mishkav Zachor as being a result, so therefore they labeled the Nachri with the Tumas Zava. Going back to a point that we already made numerous times, but it's clear that people back in the day were extraordinarily careful about Tumat Tahara. Meaning, from our perspective, it's very difficult to imagine that just because somebody is labeled the status of being Tamei, that's going to create period, it'll create separation. But it's clear, bizmanehem, in their time, so that kind of Xera obviously had an effect. What comes out now over here is that this is now going to be for Rebbe Meir, this is going to be for Rebbe Yossi, the supplemental Xera, to get his numbers up to 18. The Gemara now points out, that's fine, but Ihachila Reb Meir na mitishrei havyan. But Reb Meir also agrees to this gzera, and so therefore what comes out is that according to Reb Meir, the total now is going to be 19. So the Gemara says, Ochlin v'kelim shen tamba b'mashkin b'chadachashiv lehu. So the Gemara says, yes, so what we'll have to do is we'll go back now and we'll just do a little bit of accounting. And that is that the gzeras of Ochlin v'kelim, which was introduced to us in the Mishnah and Zavim some time ago now, so we counted that as two. So according to Rebbe Meir, he's going to consolidate those two, and he's going to view that as one, and that is in fact going to be one gzera. And so, Ad Kan, that takes us now to the end. Just quickly to summarize the daf, and then to summarize the Yud Ches Davar. So what we introduced ourselves today are to the balance of the remainder of the Yud Ches Davar. We went through the gzera of the goad, even though its circumference is a tefach, but not its diameter. And therefore, it doesn't function as an ohel. Nevertheless, for the person who's holding it, for the farmer who's holding it, it's going to be viewed as an ohel. And if the goad goes over a mace while the farmer is holding it, the farmer himself is going to be an avatuma, midrabanan, and is going to require the procedure of the meipara. The second one that we went through this morning is the collection of the grapes, the harvesting of the grapes, where according to Shammai and Beis Shammai, the gzera was, because of the juice that's expressed out, so it's going to be mukhshar, even though that juice is not l'ratzon. So why did the Chachamim make such a gzera? So the Gemara gave four different explanations, and that was on the Amud Aleph. On the Amud Beis of today's daf, we added also gidule truma, that if you take truma, replant it in the ground, even though me'ikar adin, what comes out now is not truma, non-truma, it's a davar chadash, nevertheless, the Chachamim made a gzera. Why? So the Gemara spent a little time with that, but ultimately the Gemara says is that we didn't want the Kohanim with their Truma Tamea to hold the Truma Tamea and plant it in season in order so that they can end up eating their Truma Tamea. And the Chachamim were concerned that the more they hold on to the Truma Tamea, it may lead to them end up eating it. Another Gzera we learned this morning was the person walking home finding as Shabbos started that he had a wallet in his pocket. Instead of walking home, pachos midalan amos, he should give it over to a nachri. Another gzera is the bread, oil, wine, daughters of a nachri are all going to be usher. And the reason why is because ultimately it leads to avodah zarah. And then finally, the last gzera that we introduced ourselves to this morning is the gzera of a tinok. A tinok is going to have the status of being a zav, and so that is to create period and separation between the Jewish young men and the Nachri young men, and so that they don't engage in Mishkav Zachor. You count it up, and if you want to see the Rashi, where Rashi goes through the trouble of counting it up, you could see the Rashi, Hanichla Rav Meir, you count it up, and you get to a total of 18. Just to summarize Rashi, 9 that we saw in that Mishnah in Zavim, that which is postal Truma, the nine different circumstances where Truma becomes Pasul, so that already makes up for half of them. Rashi continues, Ein Korin ve'ein Polin. So, and the two regarding Shabbos that you're not allowed to delouse nor read by candlelight on Friday night, so that's two more, HaChatzar. So that now gets us up to the number 11. So then there's just simply another 7 to go through. And Rashi said, Sinor, the pipe, Mardea, the goad, Benos Kusim, the daughters of Kusim, Botzer, the harvesting of the grapes, Gidule Truma, the growth of Truma, Nos Inkiso, the giving over of the wallet to a non-Jew, Pitam Shmeinan, Chada. And the bread and oil counts as one, and that gets us to the balance of 7. That is the total of 18 as Rashi describes them. Rashi, as you can imagine over here, Rashi is not the only listing of the 18. If you take a look at other Rishonim, their accounting is slightly different. And I'll just remind us all, the Shita of the Rambam actually has 3 different lists of 18. He has the 18 which were Gozer Babayom, he has 18 which remains the Machlokis, and he has another 18 that there is no debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Adkan.